She.
Your cat leaves you?
No, because when I was gone out of town, before I left, she started throwing up her food. I was like, what the fuck? Because I just immediately got mad at myself for being the worst cat owner in the world. Because that's how you feel when your pet throws up. I'm like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. It's your fault.
And then she, did you just say it's my fault?
No, that's how you feel. I'm saying, yeah. Like, whenever you're as the pet owner, you feel. I mean, I remember one Christmas, our dog got into the chocolate chip cookies, and I was like, felt like a total. I mean, it was my fault. I left them on the coffee table; they were right there. But anyway, so you're.
Well, was he okay?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, she ended up being fine. Same dog that was out in the middle of the street last time we were on. So your cat is it?
Oh, okay. So like
throwing up in protest because you went.
I don't know. When I'm not around, like monitoring, she will eat the dog's food, even though like we tried to keep it out of the open, but she's just a fat fucking bitch that wants everything. So
she's,
and like when I come back, I notice like, oh, you're fatter. Because like animals are that sensitive, you know.
Yeah,
they change like pretty quick.
Well, is she yours? Or you told me this before? Is she your?
She's mine now.
Officially.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? Because wasn't it your roommate?
Yeah, I stole her.
Does he know that like when you move, she's going with you?
Oh yeah, we've had this conversation. It's okay. All good. So she was like morbidly obese. Like I can show you before and after pictures. And I made a friend on Twitter and shut up. Come here. You fucking whatever.
Cats are the opposite of dogs. I mean, they just like they don't care whatsoever about what you want.
They're easier than dogs, and I don't know, I can handle it. It's what I need. Dogs annoy me. Just like the barking and the smelliness. It's like, not that I hate dogs. Like I grew up with dogs. Like dogs are fine, but like cats are chill. Yeah. And I always think back to Meet the Fockers or Meet the Parents, whatever.
Oh yeah.
Fucking what's his face's name? Oh my God.
Robert De Niro.
His character is one. He's like, with the cat, you have to earn respect. Kind of thing.
I have nipples, Greg. Can you milk me?
Can you milk me? I call it the mannery gland.
Oh, such a good movie.
Anyway.
So you left your cat, abandoned your cat to go to an event. Where was the event?
It was in Houston.
So that's
Ron Paul was
how far Texas. Away from Austin?
It was a 3-hour drive around.
I think
Houston Texas traffic is so like the amount of retardation, especially on the road, gets up there exponentially. Mm. Like I drove through 3 different wrecks. Mm. Not 3, 2. But it brings out the worst in me because like I'm not like the best driver, but I'm not a terrible driver, but I can notice like I was just being like more careless. So it's like in the air, it's contagious to be a shitty driver.
Then you should anyway, drive on the 405 out in California because that's the worst.
Ooh. Yeah, never had the pleasure in driving California traffic, but I went to this Ron Paul event, which he throws on, or really Daniel McAdams at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. They put on these events where it's basically just like a concert kind of gig where Ron Paul's the final act and they pick a topic. The topic was the Biden doctrine, nuclear Armageddon or no, sorry, fuck. I fucked it up. The Biden doctrine, new world order or nuclear Armageddon. And essentially talking about the state of the world today with Russia, Ukraine thing and the military industrial complex and basically how these warlords or Davos is essentially trying to kill us all. And
the useless eaters.
Yeah.
Right. As they so lovingly called us.
Which ironically, they're the useless eaters because they're the state and the state is a parasite and they feed off of the productive private sector and what we produce. And they are ironically trying to sodomize, castrate, kill the public intentionally so they can kill more people and we can all...
it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just a theory.
No, it's absolutely just, fucking true it's what just they're a, trying to do.
So before we get rolling on the event, I do want to shout out the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Go to shiftcrypto.ch/BitcoinMadeSimple. Get 5% off to get a hardware wallet. Use the promo code BitcoinMadeSimple and snag yourself one because Ron Paul, to segue from one thing to another, Ron Paul knows that if you are not holding your own wealth, then what are you doing? Got to get it off the exchange. Ron Paul also is featured in the 3-part series that Richard James, filmmaker from Australia, made. He made a couple of documentaries, and we have them on Movies Plus called Money and State. But I love the opening line, I think, of the second one, and it's Ron Paul, and he says, "If somebody asked me to explain the Federal Reserve in 5 minutes, I would say, I don't need 5 minutes. The Federal Reserve is a scam. Any questions?" And I was like, I just love that quote. So obviously he's the most based, and I'll be honest, from my perspective, like probably until I was like a Bitcoiner, I was like, oh, Ron Paul's like that weirdo, like, you know, third party candidate type, like kind of in my eyes was like Ross Perot, basically. It was like, this is this like oddball guy that nobody's on his side. Nobody believes him. Like he's kind of crazy. He talks these crazy theories. And, you know, I was like, I could jive with him on a couple things, but overall, it just, I think to the average American, you hear Ron Paul and you think, oh, I mean, that's that guy with the crazy libertarian ideas. But I don't know. He seems to be pretty right about some stuff.
Yeah. He's right about absolutely everything.
So walk us through, what did they talk about at this event? I mean, you know, so they talk about the Biden doctrine and everything, but like, what was the nitty gritty details that Phil Gibson walked away with?
I mean, nothing that I already didn't know, but it was essentially,
we'll reiterate it for people like me that are, you know,
smooth brained.
Yeah. A little smooth in the brain, a little smooth in the brain. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. We're all a little smooth in the brain.
I keep smoothing it out with these Sam Adams. This is not sponsored, but if Sam Adams wants to, all they have to do is send me a case of beer for free. I'd talk about it for like a year.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah. So I can sum it up in Tom Luongo's speech, but the way that these events work is that Ron Paul is the headliner, of course. And then he invites, you know, 3-4 other people in front of him to speak. So the order of operations for the program, the act, the lineup, was Dan McAdams, who is like Ron Paul's first mate, is the other guy that you see on the Liberty Report and just great foreign policy guy, libertarian, talks about the military industrial complex. And so he opened, and then it was Scott Ritter, former Air Force guy in the 80s, like literally like was doing it like in the age of Top Gun. And just a geopolitical commentator. And then it was Tom Luongo,
who I basically... Oh, he was one of the talkers. I didn't know.
Yeah. That. Yeah. I wouldn't have gone otherwise. God,
how dumb do I sound? He was one of talkers. He was one of the people. He was one of the people down there using his voice, wasn't he? God, geez, I got to move like... I'm not going to insult West Virginia without... No, I will. I'm going to move like, you know, 150 miles south and just become a West Virginian, picking up roadkill off the side of the road for dinner.
Yeah, there you go. So it was Tom, and then there was intermission, coffee break, and then Lou Rockwell. If anyone doesn't know who Lou Rockwell is, he basically founded the Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama.
Oh, nice.
Him and Murray Rothbard, God rest his soul. Lou's speech was great. If I could pay attention to it, like, God bless that man. He's 77. His health has seen better days, but it was just really sad because you could tell that he was like struggling to turn the page. It was really sweet. He had a walker up there, and they set up a ramp for him to use to get up there because he's Lou Rockwell, and like people kiss his feet and worship the ground he walks on because he made the Mises Institute, and he's written great articles in LouRockwell.com and all this great stuff. But they set up like a little desk for him, and he was reading out of a binder with laminated pages and 20 font of what he's gonna say. I wish I had that binder. Mm-hmm. But and then the final act was Ron Paul. I've been to one of these events. It was in 2019. It was called Ending the War on the War on Drugs. And stop sneezing. What are you doing? Psst, come here.
For those listening on the podcast, Phil's cat is sneezing. Mad because
did you hear that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
We do this raw, so it's just going straight up.
We don't raw dog it. We raw cat it. Oh. I'm gonna get a bunch of weird comments now. Please don't judge. And I've been in one of these things. The last one I was at was 2019. It was called Ending the War on the War on Drugs. And like Ron Paul was great, but he was particularly energetic, like the most lively.
At this one or the last one?
This one in comparison. Mm-hmm. So 3 years later, he had more energy. Like whatever the opposite of adrenochrome is, Ron Paul was doing it. Like, and I say opposite of like the good side, not the evil drinking baby side. Mm-hmm. So whatever the good guy equivalent of that is.
That's what Ron Paul is doing.
Come here. Fucking needy.
Was his son there?
Rand? No, he wasn't. Rand's doing, I guess, big boy things because he's a senator or whatever. But anyway, so it was all talking about like the current state of the world, the war in Ukraine and where things are going and how these people basically will not stop at anything to maintain their power and control. And it really all ends in potentially nuclear Armageddon. And Tom's speech was just the most concise way to wrap this up, because stop meowing.
It's fine.
I'm going to scare you under the bed. There. Okay. Problem solved. He talked about how, people say that geopolitics is a game of chess. Like, oh, Trump is playing 5D chess or whatever. Or, China is sitting in the back.
Trump is waiting to make their next move
on the chessboard. And it's not that. It's more complicated. It's like a game of Go. And Jeff Booth talks about this
in his book. The Price of Tomorrow.
Okay. What is Jeff Booth's book called?
The Price of Tomorrow.
Yeah, The Price of Tomorrow. But this is really a game of Go with not just two players, but multiple players. So with Go, it's really just like it's a strategy game to where you want to conquer 51% of the board and you win. And you do that, like say that you have black stones and your opponent has white stones. And you basically want to circle where the white stones land. So you just take that territory, like you circle them, whatever. You take the white stones off the board and they're your white stones now. And so you're doing this at the geopolitical level, but Indians have purple stones, Iran has green stones, Saudi Arabia has yellow stones, China has red stones, Russia has black stones, the West, America, Europe have white stones. And we are coming to the point where during these strategy games, everybody looks at the board game, at the game board, and they go, okay, you, everyone, go in the back room. We have to talk because they realize that whatever move they make, they're going to end up losing, and all the power is going to consolidate to one player, and that's Russia. And Russia is really winning this war, like on the board game of the world, because every sanction that keeps Game Pass, it makes them stronger.
Leaves into and their hands.
They are controlling the price of commodities because, I mean, reasons. They sit on the world's, I mean, the majority of the world's oil, soil, wheat, all these things. And they're coming back from like their currency, like just going down by saying, hey, you want all these nice commodities that really control the price of everything else in the world? Pay us some rubles or gold or eventually Bitcoin. And so everybody is looking at this, and the global South, basically not the West, so not Europe, not America, all those other players are, oh my God.
Phil is going to fight this cat now.
Self-entitled little bitch.
This is because he went away for the weekend and left his cat to fend for herself, and she ended up getting really fat. But this is a dramatic pause. I will use this opportunity to mention that you guys should go get the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Legit the best hardware wallet I have used. Simplest, easiest to use, and it is a pretty good looking hardware wallet. So go to shiftcrypto.ch/Bitcoin Made Simple. Use the promo code Bitcoin Made Simple to get 5% off. But seriously, it is, you need to get your Bitcoin off the exchanges and do it quickly, because before you know it, there's going to be laws in place where they'll say, yeah, you can't take your Bitcoin off. You can use it from here. We don't want that. So yeah, go to shiftcrypto.ch/Bitcoin Made Simple. And then also, while I'm waiting on Phil, I will tell you guys a little bit about Movies Plus. So I tweeted out and we passed 250,000 downloads of our app, which is pretty crazy. So we are chugging along, but literally getting more Bitcoin documentaries as we speak. Like, I just noticed I had a ping from a filmmaker that something should be uploaded and ready for us to put up. So we're adding more content all the time. Working on trying to figure out how to get Bitcoin podcasters on there, podcasts in general. We kind of have to, there's some technological things that have to happen on the back end to get this rolling in the right direction. But yeah, we'd like to tap into RSS feeds and RTMPS, I think that's what it is, to do the live streaming. So people can migrate over there and slowly start using a service that won't censor them. I thought of this idea, and I'm going to put it out there eventually to see if there's support for it. I think people would like it, but I am putting out I had the idea of a Bitcoin origin film that is about the origins of Bitcoin itself in like a narrative feature, and have the film, obviously Satoshi can't be in it because Satoshi, we don't know who they are. I want to make a Bitcoin origin film, and then kind of like the Social Network, but from that perspective, and then have, you know, all the early players that were in it. Go to mymoviesplus.com and check out some movies. And let me know what y'all think. The more of you that sign up and subscribe, the more awesome Bitcoin content I will create, because I will make other stuff. It's not always going to be Bitcoin, but I promise you, I will make a lot of Bitcoin content. So anyway, oh, yeah. Phil is back and alive. And that was pretty, I mean, you would think I am a radio, like, you would think that I studied radio in college, because I just somehow filled the gap while Phil was out. I assume, you know, were you giving your cat a swirly in the toilet?
I wish
to make her.
She's so self-entitled. Let me just railroad over what your little monologue was and get back to business. So, the game of Go, just to recap, actually, man, how do I recap this? Basically, all the players, all the players on the board game are recouping their stones, and they're like, okay, well, we're going to meet with the people that are winning Russia, and they're probably going to side with Russia. And so you have this split where it's actually like one side versus the other. And you're seeing this with the sanctions that are happening on Russia. They're just strengthening them, and it's weakening Europe because European countries want oil and they don't want to freeze to death in the winter and stuff. And they want to have wheat that's not astronomically high, and they want to just live a prosperous life. But these central planners at Davos don't want that to happen. But anyway, you have this cooperation and these workarounds around these sanctions. For example, India is actually buying a lot of Russian oil and they're selling it back to European countries. And so basically it's just all these soft power moves, and Russia's winning and Davos is losing. And at the end of the day, it comes down to everyone that's not Europe is going to throw a bitch fit. Everyone that's not Europe is going to side with Russia, and the West, Europe, America, Davos is going to go nuclear if they have to. That's how power crazed they are.
All right. So who is a part of Davos? Let's recap that for those that might.
Davos is basically Europe, old European money oligarchs. So Klaus Schwab created the world. Klaus Schwab created the World Economic Forum. It's only been called the World Economic Forum in since the 90s. It was originally called like the World Economic Management Meeting or some shit, and they meet at Davos in Switzerland, I believe. I need to work on my geography. I'm actually going to have Ansel Linder on this week to talk about some of this stuff, because he did a deep dive on FedWatch, and he also is a fan of Tom Luongo, but he disagrees with Tom and I, or really Tom, because I've co-opted his thesis. But he disagrees that the Fed isn't going to stop tightening. He thinks that they might pause, where at the end of the day, this is war, because the Fed is fighting to maintain its dominance and the power that it has over the global economy by being the shepherd of money and being just wielding the power of like the money transmission mechanism. And Davos wants to undercut that by basically replacing the commercial banking industry and just have the Fed issue a central bank digital currency. And so you don't have all these banks just going through the process of making money off interest payments that people pay them for loans, because that's how money's created. Like, it's not just a money printer. It is to an extent, because the Fed creates money or treasuries out of nothing, and then the Treasury Department issues those treasuries. But there's still a process in it. It's like with MMT and CBDCs, at least they don't bullshit around their evilness. They're just like, yep, Fed makes money out of nothing, and you have money now. Deal with it. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Don't you love us? And there's actually like a process in the current system of that we know of as like American capitalism. And I mean, that's how the Federal Reserve system works. Like, banks are all following like the same reserve standard. And they issue out loans, and the deposits are essentially creating the loans, because they take the deposits that the customers put in their bank account, and they take that money and like rehypothecate it and use it as a loan. And you know, you have that a liability and an asset being both the deposit and the loan at the same time. And you have fractional reserve banking, which is what makes this possible. And so that is how it's quote unquote printed or created out of nothing. And it's also printed when they issue treasuries, because that's how the debt is monetized, because treasury is a bond and people in the market, primarily the banks, the banks are actually the ones that scoop up the I believe 50% of the bonds that get issued or the treasuries that get issued by the Treasury Department. But when people use their money to buy these bonds, that is how the debt is itself monetized. So there's an actual system in how this works. And Davos,
they want to eliminate Davos wants to eliminate that system.
Yeah, exactly. They want to cut out the banks. They think that they're a middleman, but they're a strong, powerful middleman. You know, kind of like in parallel how powerful middleman can be, because India acting as the middleman to buy oil from Russia and refine it, whatever they do with it, and sell it back to Europe. Middlemen are very powerful in that way. And so you have this decentralized, I know it sounds strange to say the Federal Reserve system is decentralized, but it kind of is. And they have like
centralized,
they're all the banks are Davos. all the banks are holders, shareholders of the Federal Reserve. And basically this is just too robust of a system to go up against. And
yeah,
and Powell and his henchmen and Jamie Dimon, which by the way, Jamie Dimon has not been to any of the Davos meetings this year. He wasn't, I don't think he was there this year, and I don't think he was at virtual Davos last year. So all the, this is the example of the bifurcation that you're seeing in the global monetary system. And basically getting back to who is Davos, who comprises them, it's just like old European oligarchs. They are basically trying to, you know, use soft power and control by creating these young global leaders and selecting them to be rulers, prime ministers, presidents of countries so they can maintain power control in the world. And
which is amazing. I mean, if you've ever seen the Klaus Schwab, where he's like, we're very happy to have Prime Minister Trudeau in. It's like, are you kidding? Like, they're just openly.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny. Like, if you look at it from a movie perspective, and it's happening in real life, like, the villain, they can't help themselves, but they have to take that moment to gloat about what they're doing. And you're like, dude, you're bragging, but you're actually confessing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I think Mark Moss said it, and I like this phrase. I use it all the time now. I'm like, I'm not being a conspiracy theorist. I'm just taking them at their word.
I like that.
Like, yeah, I'm just believing them.
At this point now, they are like getting high off their own supply, which is like the smell of their own farts. Their arrogance, because they're scared and this is them projecting and they're just trying to like live off of this hype. You know, it's just like any shitcoin marketing scam, like living off hype.
We're winning and they're freaking out. And that's why they're out in the open so much, because usually they'd be in the shadows. But Klaus Schwab is losing and he does not want to be the captain of the ship that that sinks his, you know, centuries old family wealth control of the world. You know, it just, it's interesting to see how manipulative. I used to think people were joking when they said that there were 13 people that decided what happened in the world. And at the time I was like, who, like Bill Gates and stuff like that. But I didn't realize that they had puppet masters above them.
Oh yeah, I mean, someone's like telling Klaus Schwab what's gonna happen for sure.
So it's I don't know. It's so what was at the Rand Paul event? I mean, they're talking about how basically
the Ron Paul event.
Or yeah, Ron Paul. So basically, what's happening right now is that no matter what anybody does, Russia looks like it's winning. As far is that, are they the ones that like, okay, we got to do something because they're going to win?
Yeah.
No matter what we do.
That's essentially what it's coming down to. Davos is, well, all the other powers that aren't part of Davos are even probably countries within Europe, because I mean, this past week, they basically, I forget what it's called, but Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of you know, Britain is getting like a no tolerance vote or whatever it's called. And they're trying to get rid of him because he's just not really a part of the Davos train. He's been incompetent. And it's really ever since like Brexit actually went through, because with Brexit, you basically had the United Kingdom, not, I guess maybe not the UK. You had Britain, duh, Brexit Britain. You had Britain leave Davos.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
Davos controls all of Europe.
They want to, yeah. But that's kind of hard to maintain. And it's essentially because probably the people that are in charge in all these countries, even if they are pro Davos, they're actually realizing, oh, well, I kind of want my people to not starve to death. And you just have this like political power grab, like you have more bifurcation. And I hope it doesn't come to nuclear war, but these Davosian neocons, just people that hate Russia, and more importantly, just people that hate self-sovereignty of any nation. And they want to have that new world order and mm-hmm. want to have it on their watch.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, they're not.
They would exactly do absolutely everything they can in their might to maintain that. If it means nuclear Armageddon, then so be it.
I mean, I think that there will be a lot of saber rattling in that area. But I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I honestly thought that maybe I was hoping that the Russia thing was going to be a lot shorter. I thought it'd be maybe done by now.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to end anytime soon, because I mean, Putin's actually tried to have like sit down and diplomacy, and it was even Henry Kissinger, which I brought up a couple of Newsmate symbols ago. The contrast between the way Henry Kissinger looks at this and like how George Soros looks at this, like when you watch those interviews, just the difference in the mannerisms. Kissinger is just kind of calm, cool, collected, and like, hey, you know, this kind of blew up in our face. We need to have like some diplomacy before it gets worse. And you have the Soros people that are just shaking. And like quite literally, and are just watching all the power that they have melt away as the money system is being evolved, and they won't be able to be the rich cantillionaires anymore. And it's all really primarily, I would say, Russia creating this commodity backed currency, meaning the ruble. Like, you want all this stuff from us, you have to buy rubles. And like, it's a soft power tactic. And so if they don't go nuclear, like nuclear is like the nuclear option last resort. So they're first going to try to probably assassinate Putin. And there have been attempts like with any leader of any country, but he's like the big threat. And
by the way, this isn't us, like we're not supporting. I mean, like, we have bad guys that are trying to do things to other bad people.
Yeah, there's no good guy, bad guy here.
Because, yeah, I mean, there's...
Well, you know what? I would probably disagree with that a little bit, but whatever.
If you don't get yourself in trouble, Phil.
Oh, well, I guess you'll have to censor me off the network forever.
No. I'm kidding. I mean, I don't, like... Because... I mean, attack... Like, I just... I can't ever be for anyone being it's no big deal, people are getting attacked. Granted, that's happening all over the world and we're ignoring it in many other places. It's hard to see how this isn't it kind of all made sense to me with the Gladstein article of like the petrodollar, and like that really reshaped my view of a lot of geopolitics. And I mean, it was like the signpost in early February whenever Russia said they were going to accept oil or were they going to accept rubles or yuan. Yeah. for oil. And I was like, I was like, we've got a problem. You know, but I mean, sure enough, within a month, like, they're invading, and you know, it's just, yeah. I mean, the thing that sucks about all of this is there's just, it's all these oligarchs, all these heads of state that are trying to have a wiener measuring contest, and project their power. And the only people that get hurt are the regular people.
Everywhere. Yeah. I mean, that's how it's always been, but this is just
the latest iteration of it.
Yeah. And it's more than likely going to get much worse, and it has to get worse before it gets better. And
why, you know, does
I
it
foresee,
have to?
I foresee a very painful recession coming up.
You're talking financially, right?
Well, financially, culturally, I mean, when you can't afford groceries, people get mad. So,
I mean, gas prices, like, all-time high. Who would have thought that gas prices were going to hit an all-time high before before Bitcoin again? But you know, it's just, it, like, it is a, it's reached the level of absurd. And I'm not sitting here saying, like, oh, I'm like living a posh life and everything's so super uber comfortable. But like, I know that there's people that have tighter budgets in everything than I do in life. And I just can't imagine how much that hurts, like going to the gas station. Like, I mean, I literally wouldn't go anywhere. And, you know what I mean? Cause like the fact that, like, for me, yeah, you know, it's like, for paying for gas is just like, it's almost like one of the utility bills where it's just like, all right, it's fixed cost. Like,
yeah,
I spend X number of dollars on gas every month, is what it is. But now it's like, I mean, it actually, I'm like, oh God, like $96 to fill up my tank. Yeah. Like, what in the world? But like, I don't know. I just can't imagine. That's me. My side is, I just feel bad. I feel bad for people.
Yeah. I mean, I can see gas prices getting lower. Ansel kind of had a theory about this. I don't want to try to reiterate what he said because I'll butcher it. But I mean, it's a pricing signal, right? It's a price mechanism. And I mean, Putin himself doesn't like want gas crazy expensive because that basically, I guess, overvalues the gassing, oil and gassing industry in Russia, and not enough focus and capital is allocated to the other sectors of their economy. And plus, I mean, high price commodities just turns the world upside down, and it just doesn't work. Because mm-hmm. like Tom talks about this when he's feeding his goats, you know, hay shouldn't be like, you know, 10 pounds for like the cheapest kind of shit that you get. And, you know, that will last like his goats like a day. And just like the price of tin and metals and everything being like $5 a pound or something, that's not sustainable for the world.
No.
And so I don't think Russia even like wants this to happen. They really don't benefit from this in the long run. Like, sure, their economy is strengthening, but again, what Russia is wanting to do is really just like Russia first, nationalistic kind of thing. And they don't want to rule the world.
Then why are they invading Ukraine?
Because the war started in 2014 and NATO was expanding or trying to expand on the Russian border and push Russia's buttons and piss them off, because it's frankly just like,
I mean, war is
European
profitable.
Racism towards Russia, because Russia isn't part of Davos. Like, sure, Putin went to Davos, but it was so, you know, what are my enemies thinking? I mean, this is like judo KGB shit. Like, Putin literally knows judo. And so this is just what you have to do to play your cards right and play it safe and just know what your enemy is thinking and is planning on doing. And so when you have a massacre of people of like 14,000, 16,000, whatever it is, ethnic Russians die on your border. And you also have biolabs that are creating COVID on your border as well. And you keep having like these NATO expansion policies. I mean, not policies, but, you know, testing nuclear missiles on your border, even if they're mid-range or whatever. You're trying to pick a fight is what you're doing, because that nation, which is Russia, doesn't want to go along with this New World Order, European technocratic, like, faggotry is what it is. If you need to censor that out, like, go for it, whatever. But it's essentially when you have a nation trying to be a sovereign nation and try to live by the rules of international law that were established when the UN was formed, and then you have this quote-unquote rules-based order that the West is trying to abide by because they want to swing their big nuclear dicks around and they think they're hot shit, well, that's a threat to your nation. And so that's all this is. When one country steps out of line and they don't go with the New World Order agenda, I mean...
So the New World Order...
Yes, I believe that it was a Russian invasion, but Putin made the decision of when to invade. Because he would have had to anyway.
I mean, I think it's, you know, and I think that's where it gets confusing for the average person, because, you know.
Yeah, and like, this is not like the like popular opinion, because this isn't on fucking Fox News or whatever the hell mainstream media thing like you watch.
Yeah.
Even like, in like the Bitcoin space, it's so.
It is pretty polarizing.
People are like afraid to even talk about this.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, you have to I look at it from the perspective of, you know, in normie land, you know, it's like people are like, oh, the UN, I mean, they're like, they're all good, you know, the New World Order, like, you know, if you looked at on the surface what the World Economic Forum did, you'd be like, yeah, I mean, seems all right. But overall, they're obviously, or they're it's kind of a wolf in sheep's, you know, yeah, clothing. But
I mean, I think it has to get worse before it gets better is a positive, because average people are, they don't have to understand geopolitics, but they understand
gas,
how
prices,
their everyday lives are getting worse up, because the high gas prices, high prices in groceries, and the same Davos policies that are backfiring and causing high prices and everything because of sanctions, the same policies are making the, you know, having gender reassignment at age 12 or whatever, and just the cultural deterioration and destroying the sovereignty of people and families from the inside of the country. People are standing up, mom and dads going to parent-teacher conferences. And I mean, it all boils down to the midterms, and again, this all goes back to bifurcation of power and what this is going to end up looking like.
So,
and people, like, even in government, I'm don't want to toe the line on this. I mean, it's split, yes, but I mean, people have had enough and they want to change. I mean, Biden's approval rating is like 40% or 35%. Like, that is historically awful. And Davos sees that too, because, you know, he was selected by Davos, and they're probably going to try to go into supporting the GOP, the GOPE, the good old party, the Republican Party. But the E at the end of GOP is establishment. So they're going to pivot away from leftism. We're going to back this, all this progressive crazy bullshit. And then they'll probably like go hard right back to supporting the neocons on the right or something.
So that is curious, because I wonder that, and I mean, this is all like just conjecture, but like, do you think, so let's say Davos picked Biden.
Yeah.
And do you think that they thought he would appear this weak?
No, yeah, they did, because they want him to be weak to deteriorate the confidence and professionalism and just beautiful image of what America is. They are trying to embarrass America politically and economically. Economically, because it's Davos that are trying to pass all these like bailout stimulus money printing to go burr monetary policies that the Fed is not down with. They had to do a little bit during COVID, or I mean, not a little bit, a lot of it. But the Build Back Better bill that was going to be like $5, $6 trillion and have the majority of that front loaded within the first year, that was a Davos policy to ruin and weaken the credibility of the dollar and treasuries. And they're also doing the same thing by pushing for like gun control things. And again, like gender reassignment stuff and just critical race theory. And also point out of Afghanistan the way we did. Like they want, Europe essentially wants to create their own foreign policy. And they want to create their own foreign policy, and they don't want to be dependent on the strong United States military. They want to embarrass the fuck out of it and ruin the image that America has on the global stage. And Europe wants to do a reverse Bretton Woods to where all the center power comes out of Europe instead. And they do that by putting these retarded, embarrassing, like, weaken a Bernie fucking leaders and deteriorate the political confidence that people have in America.
So now they're gonna turn around because people are like, I mean, because Biden appears so weak.
Yeah, that was so feeble.
Yeah, but I mean, for the voting perspective, like next election, they're gonna go to the GOPE, the GOPE, and pick somebody that will be equally embarrassing for America?
No, not equally embarrassing. They'll probably just try to, you know, have some soft power kind of policies. I don't think it's going to be as easy though, because I this is just my assumption. I don't follow like domestic politics as much as I should, because I like this stuff better because it's like big picture. Mm-hmm. And I learn more, and I don't need to know the idiosyncrasies of like congressmen, but I'll probably, you know, go down a rabbit hole on that eventually. But I think they're just going to try to, swindle their way with different policy. I don't really know what that looks like, but I think they have just, used up the ragdoll that is the left, and the radical left has done their part by being just completely ridiculous and embarrassing the country. And that maybe they'll just take a more backseat clandestine approach and do something with the right. I don't know what that looks like. I really don't. My gut feeling is that the neocons and warmongers, Victoria Nuland's, your like all the people that, and their heirs, of course, because they're dying off, but the neocons that created the Project for a New American Century and plotted out the foreign policy about the Middle East and conquering that and regime changing, Clintonian kind of things, and I guess staunch establishment Republican types as well, they're gonna probably try to do something with that. I don't know what that looks like at this point. That's kind of beyond my pay grade, but that's just my hunch.
So now at the Ron Paul event, what did Ron Paul have to say? What did Ron Paul have to say at the event? Was he just basically backing up what Tom was saying, or?
Yeah, pretty much. And really, I guess this is going to be a nice place to end this. He really had the most political success by talking to individual people. Like, yeah, he went to give speeches and he holds these events, but it's really, he talks about the remnant. Mm-hmm. And people that listening probably know what the remnant is, but it's just the few people that actually pick up the message, whether it's they're in a crowd at a Ron Paul speech, or, you know, it's the people that Ron Paul talked to individually after the speech. And just making, I mean, just one conversation in a handshake and one epiphany like thing that you absorb from someone like Ron Paul, or someone that preaches what Ron Paul preaches, and Bitcoiners. I mean, this is the thing where like Bitcoiners don't need to convince everybody because we're the intransigent minority. And that's what the remnant is, because you taking these messages of truth and liberty, and you go, whether it's door to door, person to person, like we are the remnant in that way, because again, you just need an intransigent minority.
It's the reason
to really make a difference.
And continuing to post stuff on, like it's probably annoying to some people, but like, just continuing to pound that message. I mean, like, I keep saying it. I'm not trying to like overplay an idea that I had, but I just keep saying, I'm like, Bitcoin is $30,000 right now. And everybody's going, God, I wish I could have bought a whole Bitcoin for $3,000. And now for $3,000, you know, in 2018, you could have bought one for $3,000. I wish I would have done that, because now 0.1 Bitcoin's $3,000. Well, guess what? In 2026, 0.1 Bitcoin, you'll be lucky if that gets you $30,000.
That's right.
So plan accordingly. And, you know, like, I do feel like that perspective matters, because it's really hard to look at an asset and go, I tried to do this recently, like take myself out of the Bitcoin world and look at it like, and go, you know, like say I hadn't gone down the rabbit hole, and I was brand new, basically like I paid attention a little bit to it, but I was like, okay, maybe I'm going to put money in now. It's like, I mean, initially I'd be like, how in the world is it going to go up in price? You know what I mean? Like, it's $30,000 for one Bitcoin. How is it going to go up in price? I obviously at this point understand how it's going to go up in price forever. And, you know, the macro play, it's always going to be higher in the long term. Yes, there will be some volatility along the way. But yeah, I'm trying to like give people that perspective of like, because then there's also the idea, like people are like, oh, if I was around in 20, I would kill to go back to 2018 and buy one Bitcoin for $3,000. And well, like, look at it from this perspective. So right now people are like, should I put some money into Bitcoin? You know, new people or whatever. Oh, it's too late. And you tell them like, well, why don't you, you know, just, you know, put $3,000 into Bitcoin, you know, get you 0.1 Bitcoin. And they'd be like, well, but like, is it going to dip? Like, that's the first thing they'll ask. They'll say, is the price going to go down or up in the near term? Like, I don't know. I mean, it's going to do one or the other. It is what it is. Buy it and hold it.
Yeah. But fundamentals matter at the end of the day.
But their initial question is going to be always like, whenever you push somebody to buy for the first time, they're going to go, okay, but should I wait? Like, you know, like as if there's like some magical answer in like 3 weeks.
No,
you
know, like, I mean, I could have been kicking myself in the ass buying at like 40 or 50 or whatever, but I mean, it's part of the learning process. Bitcoin's not for any one individual, but it's there for everyone. And that's what matters.
But like but people were sitting there having these questions, and they look at 2018 when Bitcoin was at $3,000, and they were like, no brainer, I would have bought it. But those same questions were happening. You know what I mean? Like when I forget what my first entry price was. I want to say it was in like the 7,000 range. You know, so people right now would be like, oh my God, Bitcoin at 7,000. I would have bought like all of them, you know? And it's like, I remember what it was like then. Like people weren't sure what was going to happen. Like nothing was a guarantee where it would go price wise. But the only thing that you could tell people really knew deep down was that over the long haul, it was going to go up.
Yep.
And
trial and error.
So, you know, I hope that the bartender I orange pilled in the DC airport on the way to the conference, and I gave a tip in Lightning to prove how quickly it worked. And I mentioned, you know, just take extra from your paycheck that you can money that you can be like, you know what, I'm going to save this for 4 years, put that into Bitcoin. And then it'll most likely be higher by the time you go to look at it. Exactly. I hope that they're doing that. Cause the tip that I gave them has gone down in value. So I hope they, you know, weren't like, oh my God. But anyways,
yeah, man, just buy Bitcoin. And if you don't, then have fun staying poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope everyone enjoyed my ranting about the event. And yeah. I'm full of shit, then come at me. Or we can have a cordial conversation.
Come at me, bro. Yeah, let's one more shout out to the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Go to shiftcrypto.ch/BitcoinMadeSimple. Use the promo code BitcoinMadeSimple to get 5% off. And we're always saying the quiet parts out loud. This was kind of an impromptu conversation. So hope you guys enjoyed it. And just wanted to hear what Phil had learned from Ron Paul.
Yeah, I felt bad. So there wasn't a Creature from Jekyll Island episode and just been slacking but busy. I got a lot of fun stuff planned for the peeps and always appreciate the support. Share the show, share my show, but share all the other ones on this network. I'm very blessed.
Like and subscribe. And if you're on YouTube, smash that like button.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate you guys. And we will check you. We will talk. Check you. Jesus. Hockey on the brain.
We'll check you out.
We'll check you out. We will.
Dad ass.
We'll talk to y'all later. That's Texas. Talk to y'all later.
See y'all later.